Nation on God's green earth, but not some great news for people who are regular users of marijuana. And not even that regular. Using marijuana as little as once a month is associated with, well, we'll tell you, it's not good. And in fact, it is a great concern when people talk about threats to our national health. Speaking of threats to our national health, the Republican Party is anticipating getting battered on the issue of abortion, where the interesting development in American life is that since the Dobbs decision, the support for the pro-life position, ever since it has been validated to some extent by the Supreme Court that made the obvious recognition that there is nothing in the Constitution that mentions abortion, either positive or negative, and that basing legislation in every corner of the country, basing that on a non-existent portion of the Constitution that is not even there, is a mistake. Do you make the mistake better by pushing for a national ban on abortion that could be achieved, according to the Supreme Court, by a vote of the Congress, the Senate and the House, and a signature by the President of the United States? There is a new YouGov Economist poll with some revealing numbers on that issue. And Donald Trump has stood up to go ahead and pledge $100 million toward that $400 million that he owes. And what is the result? Well, we will see, but it is one of the big items of news today. And we will also be talking about Mary Poppins. Yes, not the new Mary Poppins that starred Lin-Manuel Miranda and that did okay, but the classic Mary Poppins, the one with Julie Andrews. And yes, Dick Van Dyke is Dick the Chimney Sweep. You know, that great movie, it's all of a sudden been rated less appropriate for children because of a concern with political correctness over in Great Britain. So we will get to that as well. First up, the question on there is breaking news regarding the Supreme Court. And very important breaking news. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear Donald Trump's presidential immunity claim in the election interference case. They will hear that in the week of April 22nd. The Supreme Court agreed today to decide whether Donald Trump may claim immunity in special counsel Jack Smith's election subversion case, adding another explosive appeal from the former president to its docket and further delaying his federal trial. Now, this helps President Trump considerably because it means that that federal trial, which is a crucial proceeding, which deals with the claims that he participated in encouraging the riots and what some people call an insurrection on January 6th of 2021. The Supreme Court agreed today to decide whether Donald Trump can claim immunity. This is also further delaying his federal trial, which is the, I think, most important result. The court agreed to expedite the case and hear arguments the week of April 22nd. The move puts the front runner for the Republican presidential nomination on yet another collision course with the high court, which earlier this month heard arguments in a separate case questioning whether Trump disqualified himself from running for a second term under the 14th Amendment's insurrection ban. Now, Trump's going to win that case about the so-called insurrection ban and about Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. But I don't think there is a single legal expert in the country, I mean, not one, who believes that he's going to win this total immunity case. So what happens here is the justices of the court, and we don't know how they voted or who was responsible, but agreeing to hear this case as late as April 22nd, so taking us all the way through the month of March, which hasn't even started yet, and then through most of the month of April, this further that Trump's cases get postponed, the better off he will be. And meanwhile, the appeals court judge has ruled that Trump must come up with the full bond amount to cover the $454 million civil fraud trial judgment. Former President Donald Trump must come up with the full bond amount to cover that $454 million verdict in the civil fraud trial. An appeals court judge ruled today. Associate Justice Anil Singh, however, lifted a ban on Trump's ability to obtain loans from a New York bank, which could allow him to access the equity in his assets to back the full bond amount, that $454 he has to pay off in his fraud case for business fraud. Singh denied Trump's request to delay his obligation to post the $454 million until a full appellate panel hears his motion to stay enforcement of that judgment until his appeals of the civil fraud ruling are over. And during this entire period, Trump is due to pay a great deal of interest. And the interest amounts to literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, no more millions of dollars every year. This is not necessarily good news for President Trump at all. We were also about to talk a little about the ongoing battles of President Trump and posting this bond. The lawyers for Trump have said they will post a bond of $100 million in the New York fraud case, prompting New York Attorney General Letitia James to counter that Trump is trying to get away with paying just a quarter of the court judgment against him. Trump's lawyers called the $464 million fine exorbitant and punitive, and blamed new lending restrictions a judge imposed on him for making it impossible for him to raise the full amount. Well, those lending restrictions apparently have just been struck down by an appellate judge. James' office countered that Trump simply lacked the liquid assets after James has threatened to seize prized Trump real estate assets if necessary. Trump's lawyer said in a new legal filing that Trump can't secure the full amount, and they blame New York Justice Arthur Engoron for a ruling after Trump's fraud trial that bars the former president and his company from appealing for bank financing for a period of 3 years. The interest is rising by $111,984 per day. $111,000 per day, Trump's legal team have revealed. More coming up on The Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show. MichaelMedved.com.
And on the Michael Medved show, just moments ago, the Supreme Court announced their decision to hear an appeal by Donald Trump on his claim of full immunity for anything that a former president does. That means that he can't be prosecuted for anything that he does, not just as president, but as a former president. What all of that means is that it will be until April 22nd that this issue goes before the court. And this had surprised many, many legal observers. Let me tell you why. The Supreme Court usually on issues that have a political ramification to them wants to be as little involved as possible. Because obviously, especially when you're dealing with a court where three of the nine justices were appointed by Donald Trump, you don't want an appearance of any impropriety. You don't want an appearance that, oh, yeah, well, naturally, when it comes to Kavanaugh and Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett, these are people who are going to be sympathetic to Trump because he appointed them. That's not a comfortable thing. And particularly in this decision, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia had a three-judge panel that voted unanimously concerning Trump's plea for immunity. Get out of here, knucklehead! That was basically, to use the legal terminology, what they voted. But all three of them did. There was no basis at all to believe that President Trump should go forward with his claim of immunity based upon his having held, past tense, the position of president. Judge Michael Luttig, who for many, many years was always listed as one of the most respected judicial conservatives in the country and was on an appellate court and had been rumored for several of the appointments made by President Bush. He had been rumored to be one of the people under consideration. He is a universally revered conservative judicial scholar. And he just said this about the announcement that the Supreme Court was going to be taking Trump's immunity case. Listen.
Luttig, I know this is a curveball, but I know a little bit about your intellect watching you testify before the January 6th Select Committee, so I'm going to throw you this curveball. Your reaction to the news just breaking in the last couple minutes that the United States Supreme Court will hear Trump's immunity case.
Well, thank you for having me with you this afternoon, Nicole. I'm just hearing this moment.
I just heard it in my ears through to the...
Look, this is a momentous decision just to hear this case. There was no reason in this world for the Supreme Court to take this case. The three-judge panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia had written a masterful opinion denying that the president's claims of absolute immunity. Under the Constitution and the laws of the United States, there's never been an argument that a former president is immune from prosecution for crimes that he committed while in office. On the more practical level, of course, Supreme Court is capable of deciding this very quickly in time that the former president could be tried before the election. But today's decision makes that much more unlikely.
And the problem with that is that really, it becomes, is this election going to be about handing President Trump a get-out-of-jail-free card? Because if they are unable to go forward on the most important of the prosecutions against him until the election, and after the election President Trump has indicated he probably would use his power as president to cancel the prosecution, to order the Justice Department to drop the prosecution. Now, I don't know how that would play, but I am almost sure that the president would have the power to do that if he is elected as president. It is certainly inappropriate to see the sitting president facing a criminal prosecution for having helped to incite a riot. If that is going on, the president can cancel it. I mean, the collision here and especially in an election where such a high percentage of people, certainly enough to swing the election, have said they wouldn't vote for Trump if he's convicted. Well, what if there's no chance to get a conviction because the entire process has been postponed? This also brings me to another issue that is just striking. It says that the latest YouGov economist poll finds 48% of Americans strongly or somewhat support a 16-week abortion ban, while 36% strongly or somewhat oppose it. So it is not a majority of people who support it, but close. It's 48% to 36%. 16% are not sure. However, the support is concentrated among Americans who care less about abortion as an issue than do opponents of a ban. The thing that is striking here is that for years and years, for those of us who would describe our politics as pro-life, and I would, part of the big argument for pro-life was that there is no reason to have a one-size-fits-all on abortion. It should be done state by state. This should not be the job of the federal Congress. This should be a job as close to the people as you can get by the state legislatures. And all of a sudden, for people to be saying we need a federal ban on abortion is to be throwing away that argument, which has actually put the law where it is right now, where right now it is up to the Congress in Washington State and in New York State and in Louisiana and in Mississippi. The Dobbs case was about a Mississippi case. And to go from saying that, well, this is a federalism issue and we should allow the states to make their own decision, to saying that we should now push to make this a national issue again with one size fits all from state to state to state, seems to me hypocritical, destructive, and very dangerous for Republicans. We will be right back.
Here's a special discount, 50% off just for being a MedHead annual member. Join today at michaelmedved.com.
And on the Michael Medved Show, join us now to participate in everything Medhead. Commercial-free, on-demand, Michael Medved radio show podcast available to you on demand whenever you want it. And in the light of history podcasts, commentaries, calls of the week, including calls of the week classic, and Medved History Store discounts. Plus, again, you can stream every single audio program that is available on the Michael Medved History Store with a Medhead Plus membership. Hundreds of hours of insightful and essential history programs. And again, some of them having to do with the legal history of the United States, which is, again, going to be an issue with this shocking announcement by the Supreme Court just now. All of this Medhead material is available at michaelmedved.com. Check it out. It's 20% off in a special offer, the previous cost. So it is a very real bargain. Speaking about another real bargain, something that will actually save you money and may save your life, a new story based upon researchers who have authored a very large study published today, this afternoon. It's researchers from Massachusetts General Hospital. And they came up with this information. And it's important because it's your life and health and well-being. Using marijuana as little as once a month is associated with a significantly higher risk of both heart attack and stroke, according to a large study published today by researchers from Massachusetts General Hospital. The risks rose sharply the more frequently marijuana was used. There are a lot of people in this country. I mean, I think some of the numbers say it's like 20% who use marijuana at least once a week. So if using marijuana just once a month significantly increases your risk of heart attack and stroke, which can be fatal and can change your life in a way that you don't want. The paper was published in the Journal of the American Heart Association. It adds to the growing body of evidence suggesting marijuana may be harmful to the cardiovascular system. Scientists analyzed data on nearly 435,000 patients ages 18 to 74 to see if there was a link between marijuana use and a higher risk of heart disease, stroke, or a heart attack. The data came from a behavioral risk factor survey collected between 2016 and 2020 by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In any event, we'll bring you more information on that when it becomes available, but it is striking and important. There's also a new survey, and it was conducted by a First Amendment organization, which I respect, which is called FIRE. FIRE stands for the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. And according to their survey, according to that poll, nearly a third of Americans, including similar numbers of Republicans and Democrats, say that the First Amendment goes too far in the rights it guarantees. More than half agreed that their local community should not allow a public speech that espouses a belief that they find particularly offensive. These results were disappointing but not exactly surprising, said FIRE Chief Research Advisor Sean Stevens in a press conference yesterday. Here at FIRE, we've long observed that many people who say they're concerned about free speech waver when it comes to beliefs they personally find offensive. But the best way to protect your speech in the future is to defend the right to controversial and offensive speech today. What's interesting is the survey asked respondents to read a dozen controversial statements and to pick the one they found most offensive. The most disliked beliefs were that, quote, all whites are racist oppressors, followed by statements like America got what it deserved on 9/11, and then January 6th was a peaceful protest. The survey then asked respondents whether they'd agree with allowing that opinion to be expressed in different circumstances. Half of the respondents said that their community definitely or probably should not permit a public speech expressing the opinion they found most offensive. A whopping 69% said a local college should definitely or probably not allow a professor who holds such an opinion to teach there. Over a quarter of respondents said that someone who previously said the offensive opinion should be fired from their job. You see, being fired from your job for voicing an offensive opinion is awful. And it's depressing that this is a matter that so many people believe in. But I just wanted to defend the public opinions of people who think that it should be restricted in colleges. Colleges are very often taxpayer-supported institutions. And the idea that the government should be funding and, in effect, sponsoring offensive statements like America got what it deserved on September 11th, I don't think someone should be punished or imprisoned or fined for saying that. But if you make that point of view and you are working at a college or university and you are receiving money from the government and from taxpayers, it's another matter. These results, says the press release from the libertarian-minded Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, indicate that though the average American is concerned about protecting free speech rights, a significant portion of the population seemed poised to welcome increasing censorship. I don't believe that saying that censorship involves the government. To say that a private organization or a private business or a private college for that matter or a public college for that matter has a situation where speech has consequences, that it seems to me is a different matter. And this is something, it seems to me, that is worthy of future discussion. There is another bit of breaking news involving the classic movie from, what is it, 60 years ago, which Mary Poppins, and actually the illustration in the piece in the New York Times has a picture of Dick Van Dyke as the chimney sweep and Julie Andrews as Mary Poppins. This is a movie that won Academy Award recognition. And, well, apparently they have discovered in Great Britain that speaking about freedom of speech, that there is an offensive term. And it's not the term you think it is. They say that it is racially offensive. No, it does not start with N. No, it does not end with R. It's a different term. What is the term that has led to reclassify this classic movie as not suitable for young viewers? We will get to that mystery, marvelous mystery, coming up on the MedVet Show.
Here's a special discount, 50% off just for being a MedHead annual member. Join today at michaelmedved.com.
And on the Michael Medved Show, the surprising story, and it's surprising because it's kind of tough to find out the punchline, what the racist language is in Mary Poppins. Did you ever notice, I mean, how many times have you seen Mary Poppins? I mean, I've seen it a lot, right? We had three little kids who all loved it, and they watched it when they were very young, and that meant it's on all the time. And, okay, what's the problem with Mary Poppins? Anybody know? The rating for Mary Poppins, reports the New York Times, the beloved children's musical about a nanny with magical powers that was released 60 years ago, has been raised to PG in Britain because of the use of, quote, discriminatory language, the British Board of Film Classification said. The rating change follows a wave of recontextualizing and reclassifying of films from bygone eras for modern audiences amid shifting cultural norms and mores. Mary Poppins includes two uses of an offensive racial slur to describe an indigenous group in South Africa. It is first heard when Admiral Boom asks Michael, a child, if he is going on an adventure to defeat said group. Admiral Boom repeats the slur during a chimney sweeps dance sequence when he shouts that he is being attacked. The dancing figures he spots in the distance are not black Africans, but they are white dancers with blackened faces from soot. They are chimney sweeps. The film was originally rated U for Universal. These are British ratings. Upon its release in 1964 and again in 2013 for a theatrical re-release, but the British Board of Film Classification said in a statement when it was resubmitted in February for another theatrical release, it was reclassified as parental guidance. Okay, so what's the word? I mean, I was trying to figure that out, and the New York Times doesn't mention it. But the word, can I say the word, Jeremy? Are you there? Can I say the word? I mean, I'm okay. The word that is so offensive, I guess my show is going to have to be classified as parental guidance. The word that is used by Admiral Boom twice in the movie is Hottentot. And this was a term of derision 100 years ago, having to do with some African tribesmen who were involved in conflict with the British Empire. And again, will young people hear the term Hottentot and then associated with racism when it's associated primarily with white dancers who are very lovable, who are dancing on rooftops in Mary Poppins? It's tough. Past television series also came under scrutiny at the time, as certain episodes of 30 Rock, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and Scrubs were removed from streaming platforms for featuring white characters wearing blackface. Okay, this is not blackface. I mean, you can see the picture of Dick Van Dyke. It's just soot being rubbed on his face. In any event, given the level of challenges that we have right now in the country, this is surprising. There is this about Nazis who I think they're censoring Nazis is one thing. Rick Wilson was on MSNBC, and he was talking about this issue that came up that there are people using the Nazi Z-Kyle salute and people with known Nazi connections who were participants in the recent CPAC, Conservative Political Action Conference, this year. And Rick Wilson had this to say about CPAC and the presence, not of many, but of even a handful of Nazi party activists. He said this in some of his commentary on MSNBC. Listen.
Clip There's a three. Problem with this. My grandmother used to call it the turd in the punch bowl. Mm. Once you have a turd in the punch bowl, it's not punch anymore. Once you have one Nazi in the door, you're not a conservative organization anymore. You're a pro-Nazi organization. And the fact that these people were there on the floor, perfectly comfortable, the fact that these people are circulating there now, because they are all part of a philosophy that Steve Bannon infected the GOP with called no enemies to my right.
Right.
Which is why they were fine with Charlottesville at a certain level, which is why they're fine with these people. They look at these people as their shock troops, as their best guys, as the people that are going to go out there and metaphorically or literally swing at their enemies.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Matt Schlapp should be ashamed of himself.
For a lot of reasons.
But he has no possibility of understanding just how corrupt and corrupted this is. Once you're okay with Nazis there, and they clearly like to see the PR damage.
Yeah.
But the guys were in the facility, you know, giving the Heil Hitler. I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. One is too many.
I think we can agree with that. Shouldn't that be the case? There's a new movie. It's just released now on DVD and Blu-ray. It's a movie that came out more than a year ago. But it's well looking up at DVD and Blu-ray. The release date was set for yesterday. The movie is a historical film about the Miranda case. For people who are interested in the law and courtrooms and the impact of justice on individuals, Miranda's victim is fascinating. Listen.
Now it's time for MedVed's Entertainment Minute.
Abigail Breslin plays a rape victim in Arizona who risks everything to testify against the perpetrator with help from a dedicated prosecutor played by Luke Wilson in Miranda's Victim. Now available for rent on multiple streaming services.
I'm testifying.
I promise I'm going to put this guy in jail for a long time.
Guilty as charged.
The issue is whether this defendant's confession should have been allowed in evidence.
That's Ryan Philippe, who joins a cast that includes Andy Garcia and Donald Sutherland and many more, in retelling the fascinating true story about the Miranda case that made it all the way to the Supreme Court and changed our understanding of what the Constitution meant. A dozen characters come across as vivid and compelling, though an intrusive and clumsy film score with music from the 1950s and 60s is a frequent distraction. Not officially rated, but would be an R with frank and graphic conversation about rape. 3 stars for the fascinating Miranda's Victim. And you've heard about Miranda warnings. I don't have to give you any warnings about this film, except that, yes, it is about the very adult impact of what rape can do, especially when rape through legal manipulation is basically goes, at least initially, unpunished. Meanwhile, coming up next time on the MedVed Show,